Hi there. This is Gregory Abbott bringing you a program called How About That? Each week, How About That will try to keep you up to date on everything from gadgets to gizmos, oddities to curiosities. We'll try to bring you stories about the usual and the unusual, give you facts and fantasies, something old and something new. We hope you find it different, entertaining, and helpful. Our first How About That item today is a new gadget that ought to prove a boon to all of us, whether we dine out often or only occasionally. It's a device calculated to take the weight out of the waiter. It's a miniature so-called lighthouse for restaurant and nightclub tables. When you want to order, you simply turn on this lighthouse and wait, not too long, we hope, for the waiter. Upon taking your order, the waiter switches off the lighthouse, knows which of his tables needs service, and the manager or head waiter can keep a knowing eye. Ah, sweet mystery of light. You know, I don't know a thing about your like ours. That miscellaneous column seems... We discovered one for the umpty-umpth time. We loaned one of our expensive umbrellas to a guest who got caught at our house when the rains came. I don't know if you've had the person who just couldn't put up with it anymore. The other night I read a news item about this gentleman telling how he had invented what he calls an emergency umbrella. Made out of waterproof paper and made to sell well under a dollar. How about that? Now we can afford to have a couple of these umbrellas around the house. Then when we speed the parting guest in the midst of a rainstorm, we won't feel a little sick in the budget. Oh, speaking of hobbies, and we'd like to for a moment, Oliver Wendell Holmes once said that people with hobbies rode their hobby horses without bit or bridle. And Webster's Dictionary claims that a hobby is, quote, an extravagant or persistent interest, unquote. I'm sure most of us agree, however, that a hobby is a good thing to have. It helps us forget our troubles, it's a welcome change from the routine of our daily lives, and it gives us a chance to do something on our own. Well, here's a new and different hobby that more and more people are discovering. It pays double dividends. It's creating things with sterling silver. Now hold on, don't let Webster fool you. It's not half as extravagant as you'd think. Matter of fact, by making your own sterling silver objects, you can save more than half what they would cost. The fundamentals are easy to master. The tools are inexpensive and require little space. Whenever you have free time, evenings, weekends, or whenever, you can spend it profitably making hundreds of different articles, bracelets, earrings, rings, cufflinks, tie clasps. The list never ends. By creating your own designs, you can have distinctive originals. Might be you could even sell them. Looking for a hobby? Maybe this is it. I wonder how many times you've said to yourself, now I've heard everything. Well, that's just how I felt. And I think you will too when you hear about rubber roads. Yes, sir, this is a real believe-it-or-not story, one that my friend Bob Ripley would have loved. Here's how it goes. Some years ago, a scientist in Holland conceived the idea of mixing rubber powder with asphalt for the top surfacing of roads. A test strip was laid down, which proved highly successful. After a while, two engineers from the United States on a visit to Holland were invited to inspect this trial road. What they saw made a big impression, and upon their return to this country, they urged road construction engineers to try out this new method. Actually, what takes place is this. When the rubber powder is mixed with the asphalt, it causes a change to take place which makes the asphalt itself amazingly resistant to temperature variations. Thus, the roads last longer in good condition and the mixture drastically cuts the need for resurfacing. No more cracks in winter, no bubbling in summer. Equally important from our immediate and personal viewpoint as car drivers is that tests show that you and I can bring our cars to a much faster stop. This increased safety factor is most important with today's increased traffic and increased speeds. So far, test strips have been laid in Canada, Virginia, Texas, Ohio, and Minnesota. So, maybe we can look forward to traveling a lot of soft miles on rubber roads in the near future. How about that? Most of us have pretty definite ideas on just how we like our eggs cooked, no matter what style. Perhaps it's because eggs are generally associated with breakfast. And breakfast comes so soon after getting up reluctantly from that oh-so-comfortable bed. Whatever the reason, it's true. So, here's a personal how about that item that I'd like to share with all my listeners. It has to do with cooking a perfect poached egg, something I never had until I got this advice from a food editor of one of our leading national magazines. But don't reach for a pencil. No need to jot anything down. Just listen carefully. This is the way to turn out a perfect poached egg every time. First, fill your frying pan with water about an inch and a half deep. Bring to a brisk boil, add 2 teaspoons of salt and 1 tablespoon of butter or margarine. This not only adds to the flavor but also helps keep the egg in shape. Then turn the heat down until the water just barely bubbles. Now slip the eggs into the water. The best way to do this is to break the egg into a saucer first, then slide it into the water. Next, cover the pan and turn off the heat entirely. That's the point to remember. You must turn off the heat entirely. Let it stand for 3 or 4 minutes, depending upon your taste. Then, using a pancake turner with holes in the bottom, lift the egg and drain on paper toweling. Serve on hot buttered toast, muffins, or rusk. Easy? You bet. Delicious? Mmm. Have you ever thought how nice it would be to pick out your ideal building lot? Pick out your ideal home, then put the two together? All in 2 weeks' time? Well, according to a trade magazine I was reading the other day, that's not as crazy as it sounds. Matter of fact, a builder in California is doing just that right now. He constructs a whole house right on an assembly line, then puts it on a trailer truck and delivers it to you, wherever you want your front door to be. Getting so you hardly have to think about something before it gets done for you. Our next How About That item is one I'm particularly happy to bring to your attention. I'm sure you're all familiar with CARE, C-A-R-E. It's a wonderful organization headed by Douglas Fairbanks, Jr., which has given us on this side of the Atlantic the opportunity of supplying our friends and relatives on the other side with the food and clothing they so badly need and so gratefully accept. Hundreds of thousands of CARE packages have been and are still being sent overseas. But as you know, there's more to life than taking care of physical needs. There's spiritual hunger for one thing, and hunger for knowledge for another. And for this latter, CARE has a program which may not have come to your attention. As you know, when World War II came, for the second time in one generation, all of the great libraries of Europe were destroyed. At the same time, the Nazis threw their propaganda machine into high gear, grinding out their myths, their lies, their absurdities, and their obscenities. Today, it's the Russians' turn. And today, with a minimum of factual books on hand in the Iron Curtain countries, and all the other countries also, Europeans find it hard to know what to believe, hard to get the facts. But now CARE has developed a program that offers us the direct opportunity to help do something about the great need for truthful, authoritative books in Europe's libraries. Books that will help stem the rising tide of communist propaganda. Please understand, it's not books themselves that are needed, but money to buy books. Label your contribution, Books, and mail to CARE, C-A-R-E, 20 Broad Street. That's 20 Broad Street, New York 5, New York. Say, if you'd like to know just how exotic ironing can be, listen to this. Two ladies in New York have invented a perfumed ironing pad. That's right, an ironing pad that's impregnated with imported French perfumes. Theory is that when you iron your lingerie and lovelies, they pick up the scent of the perfume in the pad. Sounds fine for the ladies, but if I, for one, find that my wife forgot to change pads, and my shirts and shorts have overtones of jasmine or lily of the valley, she and I are going to have a few quiet words. All I can say is, how about that? You'll probably agree that 1949 was one of the greatest years in medical science. One new drug after another, cortisone, ACT, oreomycin, ammoniated dental preparations, and finally the antihistamine cold tablets. But perhaps you haven't heard of another drug which medical science gave the world in 1949. This new medicine, which received very little publicity, is vitamin B12. It's considerably more than a vitamin, however. It's truly a remarkable medicine, for B12 promises to combat most effectively the toll-taking anemias of various kinds, anemias that afflict untold millions of Americans every year, pernicious anemia, the anemia that affects one out of every seven mothers in childbirth, the anemia of infancy, the anemia that afflicts so many adolescents. B12 offers new hope for a fuller life for millions and millions of people. And here's an inspiring story out of the Far East that I'd like to tell you about. By 1945, when the Jap forces had been driven out of Southeast Asia, 400,000 Malayan natives who owned their own farms and who produced a large part of the world's supply of natural rubber had become victims of the war's devastation. Surprisingly enough, the Japs had left the rubber trees standing, but they'd destroyed most of the necessary machinery. And they had also cut off the world markets for Malaya's rubber. The farms and plantations, which had been left unattended, had turned largely to underbrush. So, in 1945, these Malayans found themselves literally out of business. But instead of looking to the United States or other foreign powers for assistance, they set out to rebuild for and by themselves. And they succeeded. Today, these 400,000 small businessmen of the Far East are once again sending to us and the rest of the world the crude rubber so essential to our everyday needs. In today's world picture, this kind of a self-help story rates a big how about that. My last item holds out hope at last for the long-suffering worker who commutes to his job in the big city. Sounds as though we were about to get a break. The U.S. Civil Aeronautics Board is currently studying a plan for the use of helicopter sky buses on scheduled routes in and around New York City. In the meantime, manufacturers are producing still larger copters, planes capable of carrying from 12 to 40 people. If the plan works in New York City, Westchester, Long Island, Connecticut, and New Jersey, it will be extended to other cities throughout the country. If you are, or ever have been a commuter, you'll know what I mean when I say, how about that? And that just about winds up our program for today. Your host for How About That has been Gregory Abbott, who signs himself sincerely yours and hopes you'll be listening next week.